一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's June 5th and the Speaker Podcast and Friends are back for another episode of GER Talk. Episode 10 of Macross Delta has just finished, and the one thing that's on everyone's minds is the fact that this show just went full Tomino. And we're going to get into that in a moment, but among those getting into it with me, on my left I have...
Adrian Lozano, and I don't know what a Tomino is.
See you next time, the mysterious Tomino.
Ian Liu, and I'm afraid if it goes Tomino, that means no one we know is going to survive.
And from a little further out in Tokyo...
Who?
That's your cue.
You're the only one further out in Tokyo,
Wait,
Sarah.
Me? Really? Okay. Hi, it's Sarah. Hi, good to see you.
Welcome back, Sarah. And to someone else who certainly isn't in Tokyo.
Yes, from across the Pacific Ocean. This is Mikey Geary. How are you guys? Thanks for having me back on.
Welcome back, Mike. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you much.
But, look, everyone, let's get straight into it. Although, I guess, as always, our usual disclaimer, we've just finished watching this episode. It's just aired. We've been watching it raw. We have no subs. We don't got no time for subs. There may be mistakes. There won't be retractions. And on that note, let's get into this. This episode starts off. First of all, Egan, do you remember the name?
It's called Senko no Oxia. Oxia's Flash, or Flash of Oxia.
Right. Mm-hmm. No Hathaway, but definitely Tomino. Mm-hmm. And the episode opens up on Windermere. We see a transport shuttle from a planet called Epsilon, or what appears to be Epsilon, with a passenger, this guy called Belga, and he's there to present to the king. He's been doing research on, I think it was, he called it a protoculture system, which is basically an amplifier for Heinz's song. And they hadn't finished putting it together yet, but it would boost Heinz's power. Of course, this means Heinz's lifespan would potentially be shortened yet more. But because of just the very prospect of them being able to increase the power of his song, the king was all for it. He was like, okay, let's do this. We then cut, post-opening, to something we heard about on the website a few days before in the weekly tease. And it's something that had been mentioned at least twice in the series before, and that is the Jellyfish Festival. Ragnar and Arad, who should have been born on Ragnar, apparently, is all about the jellyfish culture. And looking at this Jellyfish Festival, I've got to say, the designers obviously had a field day working this motif into everything. Guys, how was the Jellyfish Festival for you?
The first thing I was wondering was, like, in the description, in the way they described it, they said, oh, no, it's the Lover's Festival, and when everything comes together underneath the jellyfish, that's when you'll find eternal love. And just like Hayate was like, under the jellyfish, and then we find out what that means later on.
We do. Mm-hmm. I know that when this episode was announced, excuse me, there were... quite a few people who, well, a few comments I saw online, people were like, oh no, this is the onsen episode, this is the hot springs episode, this is the chasing Cheryl's panties around the school episode, isn't it? Didn't Carl Morris say we weren't going to have one of these? This is going to be nothing but fan service. And I've got to say, it was anything but. I thought the Jellyfish Festival was handled pretty tastefully. And it was, as you mentioned, Egan, it said that anyone, you know, couples that declare their love under the jellyfish... pretty much together forever. And as a result, there's all these couples. And, you know, you immediately see it, this explanation that Chuck gives. Both Freya and Mirage kind of look over at Hayate, who has no idea. He is so the Tenchi of this show. But is it just me, or is the love triangle... You mentioned, I think, last episode, Adrian, or maybe the one before that, that the love triangle's finally something we can see. It was maybe in its beginning stages, but the first 5-6 episodes, I know you said a few times, what love triangle?
Yeah.
Would it be too much to say that it's in full effect at this point?
Oh, it's nowhere near in full effect, especially this far in.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of stuff that actually happened within this episode, no, it is not nearly like where it should be.
Okay.
So
Go ahead. I thought you were done.
It's just that I mean the characters really haven't had a lot of time apart you know, they've, I mean, on missions and stuff, they're with each other, but they haven't really had their own personal time, except for the beach scene when they're on the beach. But they're talking about work. So, and Freya had seen it as, oh, you know, it's like, oh, it's looking at a sunset. It's like, oh, and then she, like, took off. But there hasn't actually been the scene where they're together and it kind of just pop, you know, there's that snap and there's a connection.
Freya's been doing all of the reactions, but Raj, well, this episode, she starts, well, twitching, if that can be called a reaction.
So, and Sarah?
In the previous episode, Freya reacted in a way I didn't expect when they said, oh, you know, Mirage is going to visit her husband or whatever, and Freya was like, what? But she's not having, like, a serious reaction. She's kind of like, oh my god, I can't believe it. But then in this episode, she started to show signs of kind of, like, both her and Mirage of, ooh, Jellyfish Festival, ooh, Eternal Love, which just seems to be kind of a change in emotion between them, which I thought was really interesting. But at this moment, at this time, they haven't had enough time between any of them to have really a strong relationship. So I think the triangle is still not there.
Yeah. And if any character needs to die, it's, you know... Yeah. Ray, because she's just messing up my whole vibe, because it's a couples festival and she's all over Machina. Like, she just needs to go.
It's a couples festival. That makes total sense.
She's just ruining it.
They are the couple.
Yes.
I mean, they need to stop that.
No. Must continue.
So
I will say this though, and I'll probably get into it more at the end because it doesn't really have to do with this episode, more with the overall triangle business. But I will say that I feel like the triangle stuff was shoehorned in, and like I'll get into it later. That was my feeling last week. But can we just say about the Jellyfish Festival that our favorite asshole Cat Seal also found love?
He is getting some of that tail tonight, isn't he, Mike?
Yes, he is.
But he doesn't have a tail. He's a catfish-ish.
Now, while we're on the subject of the Jellyfish Festival, I have to go to my favorite part, which was Messer and Kaname, which I never had seen them as a couple until the previous episode. And I only saw the previous episode, like, oh, I don't know, 2 hours ago. So,
well, you mustn't have been seeing all the fan art that's been on Twitter for the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, so
been such a tag all over.
Oh, yeah, so like, oh, just like 2 hours ago, I started shipping them, and well, you know, they swore their eternal love, sort of. So, maybe he'll come out alive.
You're telling us you jinxed it all, didn't you, Sarah? Because you started shipping them, and what happens? Well, we'll get to that. So, we find out that Messer is getting transferred off-planet out of Delta to be a training instructor elsewhere. And I thought that was actually pretty neat because I've heard, you know, some people I've talked to about the previous episode were like, look, it's just foolish for Delta to keep him around when he's by far the best pilot. He can say, just kill me if I go VAR, but no one can take him down. So this was a smart thing to do, and now that his condition is widely known, it is the logical progression of things. So we find out about that, and while we're still at the festival, Machina sends Hayate out to grab Messer and bring him to the festival, because of course he's not there, because he's not going to do something so petty as a jellyfish festival. And the girls are all talking about love triangles, you know, like we were. And it was interesting, because Reina said outright, she's like, no, Kaname likes Arid. She's just very matter-of-fact. She just spat it out there. And Hayate was kind of shocked by this. She's like, he's like, wait, the old jellyfish? Like, does he know about this? Like, this is all just a pain in the butt. If people like each other, they should just say it. Again, at which point, Mirage and Freya both kind of look at him. So he's as clueless as ever, but I'm getting the vibe that at least both girls seem to know on some level, even if it's subconscious, that they like him, I think, to some extent. So Hayate brings Messer down to the festival, and he gets his moment that you're talking about there, Sarah, on the dock with Kaname, at which point we see the secret of the jellyfish. Egan, what do the jellyfish do?
they rise up into the air. It's like exactly the way they described it, except we didn't believe it, Oriate. And that's when they mean, like, you send out, you know, you find, you know, your love to be internal when you confess it underneath them.
Literally underneath them. But what made them fly was naked Mikomo. I'd not fly out of the water if I saw naked Mikomo as well.
I think you would fly into
the water. But what was so cute... What was so cute is when the jellyfish were rising, they turned into hearts. Their little insides turned into hearts.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they did.
I thought they were M's because we're watching Macross, but...
No, but they were little hearts. That's why it's the Eternal Love Festival, right?
Well, it's like a beating heart. I'm watching it right now, like on mute.
I like how Freya is all of a sudden no longer clumsy. She can jump on top of a pole and stay on perfectly balanced. In the moment of things.
I was expecting somebody to say, should you really be doing that?
Well, Gwen was predicting Freya was going to fall onto Hayate.
Yeah, I was thinking, knowing how klutzy she is, she'd be balancing on that post on the wharf, fall, and she'd be under the jellyfish, and she'd kind of, you know, fall, smooch, and do a bit of a, you know, what do you call it, like a reverse... anime trope where the guy falls into the girl's tits, she'd fall onto Hayate.
The weird thing is, if you actually look at the shot, that Hayate is standing next to Chuck while all this is going on.
It's not just right.
Freya is on the other side of Chuck, and Mirage is all the way to the other side.
This is a completely different fandom, Adrian. Yeah,
this is an all new triangle.
The comic market.
But this scene with Messer and
in Kaname?
Kaname is just... It was a really nice scene. It's, and the whole point of him bringing back that kind of MP3 bracelet thing he was wearing
right.
for the previous episode and thanking her and, like, giving it to her, that's not a sign or a hint to anything. That just means, you know, like, he's gonna... It's like I was telling you, this is, like, the Gekkon Shoujo Nozaki-kun moment at the very end of the episode where he goes, yeah, I love... fireworks. When they're looking at fireworks. Like, that's actually the ending. Like, he goes, well, I love, too. Fireworks.
The closest they'll ever get to say anything.
Yeah, so, you know
what. But I think their bond is beyond just like, oh, I love you, and those previous people we saw making out. I think it's more of a strong, you saved my life, you mean more to me than anything kind of bond that can't be said with words.
Because arguably they saved each other's lives. If it weren't for Kaname, Messer wouldn't be here. If Messer didn't save Kaname so many times, they need each other.
Right. Yeah, and I think that that scene, it didn't have a full confession or anything, but I think that what happened there was stronger than words.
It was already understood.
I don't know. I was expecting him to actually do something or something to happen, but it's just he thanks her and then we cut to the next morning and he's taking off.
Yeah, but before we go to the next morning, one thing, as we spoke about last week about the whole idol culture and how Messer is basically the alpha male otaku groupie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no love confession. There's just giving the gift and the one appreciating it. So while I was watching it, I knew it wasn't going anywhere because it's following idol culture.
Nice.
That's terrible.
That was true. And idol culture will actually have an effect on probably what happens after this episode.
So you're saying that before they had their moment on the wharf, 3,000 people in that festival came by and did a high five for Kaname, and Renato popped up and you said, that girl's filthy hands. So, can we move on to the next one?
Wait.
So, okay, this is really funny, but I went immediately when Messer left, I was like, I mailed Egan, I was like, wait, did they just kill off my favorite character? As a joke, and I said no, I thought maybe he was being written out of the show. But
how could you think of such a thing, Sarah? Again, you're jinxing this.
You said you wanted
you
to
cross it. You did it.
Yeah.
No.
I'm so terrible.
You said you wanted to ship them, so they shipped them out the show. They got them out of there.
I'm used to it.
Well, the thing I thought with Messer shipping out was that, you know, for sure, well, you know, they'll probably, I was thinking, you know, they'll bring him back in at the earliest, maybe two or three episodes' time, he'll come back and save someone, or they'll leave him for a finale, maybe. Either the season midpoint or the end of the show. He'll make a big triumphant comeback, maybe go out in a blaze of glory. That's what I was thinking, but...
I thought it was funny, because the only thing that I thought of at that time was, I'm like, oh, this is kind of like Voltron, where, like, Sven gets shipped off to the other planet. Oh, wait a minute, in the original version, he was killed off. Yeah. He never got shipped off. Oh. That was the American version.
So it's like the Tamagotchi going flying off to another planet or something like that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now I want fan art of Messer as a Tamagotchi.
If you don't feed him, he'll poop and just eat.
There will be Doja Shield. You know there will be Doja Shield.
It'd be a big mess.
There was one other thing that we noticed that in the middle, before we move on, of the festival, like you were saying, Mikumu was just floating among the ruins. And not just floating there, but she had no gear on, no breathing gear. And she's just like floating serenely underneath the water, as it looked like.
Yeah. The word is naked.
Oh, yeah, there's that too, but I'm sure other
people
noticed
that. She is a mermaid. I'm
that
calling it now.
Explain so much now.
Yeah, I mean, because when they first show her, she's just like floating on top of the water, like and like from like Ghost in the Shell, like Kusanagi, where she's just floating. It's just like that scene. She's just looking up, and then later in the ruins, she's deep down in the ruins. And the only time they ever showed them diving, when they were all singing, they were all in gear. Oxygen gear. But this time, she's just down there, just smiling and grinning.
Well, if I saw a naked Mikumu, I'd be smiling and grinning too. But let's move on. So, up on the bridge, meanwhile, Captain Johnson and Arad are doing the old man thing. It's almost like a scene from Yamato. And they're having, you know, they've got too much responsibility and too much duty. They've got their little sake bottle up on the bridge and they're sitting there cross-legged having a chit-chat. And we hear a couple of interesting things. There's still been no reaction from the ruins that they've found, similar to last episode from Raokure singing. And Lady M has asked Johnson, although it's not made clear if she's asked Johnson or asked the entire corporation of Chaos, to increase security around Al-Shahal and Ragnar, because those are the two planets left with major protoculture ruins on them that have yet to fall to Windermere. And it's funny they should mention this, because this is kind of a setup, because very soon after that we see all the characters on Al-Shahal again. It's the return to episode 1. Before we do that, go there though, back at the festival we find out that Freya's popularity is on the rise. She's got a lot of fans. The detractors saying she was a spy have apparently kind of gone.
Because she's not being a very good spy of doing what she's doing now. You know?
Right. And Makina mentioned something which ties into what Freya said a couple of episodes back. You know, she said she called Mesa down to be with Kaname, not to rig the triangle with her and Mesa and Arad, but she just hoped they could make some memories, because members of Valkyrie and Delta, like, they never know when they might die. And that they have to live in the here and now. So this is similar to what Freya said a few episodes back, and it means, you know, if you're in Valkyra and Delta, are you that different to a Windermerian? It also makes me wonder whether or not, you know, since we have at the moment the Macross E manga talking about the formation of the first group that kind of was a proto-Valkyra, how many singers have died to date? You know, in the last 7 or 8 years that the VAR has been an issue. Have there been deaths? Are there backstories of other characters? Is this like AKB48, but when you say first generation or second generation of a singer, they literally have to die off before the next generation can take over?
Wow.
Who knows?
If this episode wasn't morbid enough. Whoa.
I just thought that was kind of interesting. So once Mess is shipped off, let's look at the situation, guys. We have Hines with this amplifier, this protoculture system amplifier, which means they've got a stronger Hind song, which potentially larger outbreaks of VAR, stronger outbreaks of VAR, and Delta is not only down a man, they're down their best man, their man who was really the only good pilot that didn't necessarily need a singer to resonate with him. So that's a terrible situation to be in. So Hind's starts singing. This amplifier got completed damn quickly for something that was incomplete at the beginning of the episode. And he sings this song, and there's not only ruins on one planet, there's ruins on multiple planets reacting. There's reactions on planets where they didn't think there were ruins. And they're in Al-Shahal when this happens, so the VAR is outbreaking everywhere in Al-Shahal. And of course, it's affecting the ruins, which are reacting. So while Kyurei jump into action, singing at the ruins, they are singing, appropriately enough, "While Kyurei attack." And Mikomo's singing seems to push back against Heinz's effect on the ruins. And Mikomo and Freya are both there, and then the ruins react with them, and they seem to have this vision where they see what looks like a big crater, a hole. Is it the hole on Windermere? I'm presuming it is, but it seemed to be a lot bigger in size to the one in Windermere.
It's hard to say because, you know, as far as we know, it was the size of a city, right?
Mm.
So it seemed about the right size, yeah.
So they have this vision, and then the vision ends and they're knocked out. And while this is happening, because the Aerial Knights are there along with Heinz's song on Al-Shahal, the Aerial Knights are kicking the butts of Delta, like, you know, Hayate gets winged, Mirage gets winged, there's no Messer, or is there? Bogue does his usual thing with the twins, he makes a direct beeline to shoot Valkyrie, which is a real dick move when you think that they're not on a bridge, they don't have a shield, they don't even have their drones yet. He takes a direct shot, but wait for it. Messer has apparently been watching Macross Plus because he folds in atmosphere with a fold booster, and immediately takes out one of the Aerial Knights, one of the twins. I'm not sure how badly that guy got taken out, because he took a direct hit, but it looks
like... He slipped back, away. He didn't explode or anything, so we're seeing...
And then he blocks this blast, this shot that Bogue has taken, at an unprotected Valkyrie, two of whom are unconscious. What a prick. Messer is almost varring out. He's saved Kaname, he's protected from the blast. He's taken out some bad guys. He said, "Look, Kaname, sing to stop me from going full VAR. Because no one wants to go full VAR. You wouldn't like me when I'm full VAR." So Kaname goes into singing Axia. And what this enables Messer to do, he almost controls the virus or the syndrome to the point that he's pretty much got Windermerian style level reflexes. So he's piloting.
I was going to say, like,
yeah,
the VAR, like, almost at this point, we think Kaname's singing. It almost, like, enhances the VAR, like, enhances his ability.
Right, so could they weaponize the VAR, I wonder?
You were saying, yeah. Ryan, about how it's almost like what we heard in the episode title from the previous episode might be a hint of what this he's going to do right now.
And what was the name of that episode?
Genkai no Uncontrol. So it's hard to figure out what that meant, but it meant it could be interpreted that he's now, like, on the edge of... being in control and out of control, and that makes him even more powerful.
And so Messer's just going full on after Keith. It looks at one point that they can both see the wind and they're both resonating. Now, if Kaname is singing, I get it that Messer would be resonating. What the hell is Keith resonating with? Is he resonating with Messer? Is this another triangle we haven't had time to get into? I don't know why Keith is...
He could be resonating with Heinz.
Ah, with the song.
And .. That's another place Comic Market is going to go.
All right. He good be. And they're fighting, and it's a heck of a battle. I'd say it's one of the best battles in the series so far.
Yes,
indeed. It's not the best. Wow, Sarah, even you thought so, because I know you're not usually watching this for the mecha action.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, even with previous mech anime, I usually kind of sleep through it. But then it really just once in a while, there's these... once in a while there's a battle that really gets me into it, that really gets me excited, and that one was definitely good because it was mixing drama and action and music very well, and I just really enjoyed it.
And a very good song during this set it perfect. And yeah, I mean, they've done this before, but this was probably my favorite version of this song.
Axia, we only heard, you know, the tiny bit from the bracelet, really. So this is the first time we'd heard anything resembling a real one. It's a good song.
Well, every song that I've heard has grown on me. This is the first one that just played, and I was like, I like this song.
Hmm.
So
I had the same
reaction. When I heard it last week, I was like, oh, I kind of like that song. And then when I heard the full version, I was like, this is it. I think it's because it resonated emotionally, too. Like, you know, this song carried throughout the end of the episode. Like, they didn't do an ending or anything like that. And so it was awesome. Like, it really set the tone. Like, it was the perfect backdrop for that battle and everything like that.
Well, it didn't just resonate with you, Mike. It resonated with Messer as well, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
yeah, I actually think, you know, the previous song in this episode, Valkyrie Attack, is still probably the weaker song of the Valkyrie lineup to date. Although there was also a Jellyfish song that that was sung by Freya earlier on at the festival, which was very much their Ninjin Loves You, Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, oh my god, this is the Ninjin Loves You, Yeah of Delta.
So Sarah, this fight is going on, and do you want to tell us what happened?
Oh, crap. Well, there's some people who fly. Guy voiced by Kimura Ryohei and, what's his name, Messer, are fighting. And, things don't go so well. Uh-huh. And in the end, he keeps in control for a very long time, and you think, oh, maybe he's going to get through it. But in the end, unfortunately, blonde guy shoots him and he goes splat. And I was expecting him to explode, like his vessel to explode, and then you wouldn't see anything. So this is really gruesome.
Welcome to Macross.
I mean, I know, but Jesus, there's no room for error. I mean, he's dead. And it was really shocking, and Kaname's reaction as well was just heartbreaking.
I mean, what's worse, this? Well, get it, like, impaled by an alien and then sucked out in outer space?
Him.
Flying into the atmosphere and burning up into the atmosphere and then being stuck in the Earth's orbit, mummifying throughout eternity?
Yep, yep.
No, okay, I do have to say, though, that, yes, you see Keith's laser blast goes through Master's cockpit. You see the splatter of blood, and then you just see Konami collapse. She just starts crying, and then as off in the distance, you see very reminiscent of Star Trek III, the Enterprise falling into the planet. Like, just the whole, like, you see his Valk going down, but you do not see a dead body. And all... You don't, and I know it would
never
cheapen
the optimist.
It, but could this be the? No, I'm just saying, could this be the ultimate fake out? We've seen the fake out before, you know, with other Macross series, you know, Ozma in Frontier. I mean, like, is this? Are they faking you out? Are they going to go and find his Valk, and he's going to be like all shot up, but he's alive? And maybe this is maybe getting to the brink of death is what cures him of the VAR. I don't know, but all I'm saying is you don't see a body, and until you see a body, he ain't dead.
I hope that's true. I thought the same thing with Cross Eng and things like that. Just like, it seems like it's absolutely impossible. They've exploded. They've gotten hit by a car. You don't think they can live, but then just crazy stuff happens. So I'm just gonna keep my hopes up.
Well, Mike.
And as a fan, I think it would cheapen it. I think that would suck. But again, you know, who's the target audience of the show? Like, you know, people like Sarah, girls, right? That, and they don't want this guy to die.
Again,
so
it's all your fault, Sarah.
What?
Well, hey, Mike.
I am not a Fujoshi. Yeah. Do not put me in their category.
What's up, Adrian?
Well, you know what Messer did.
What's that?
He gave life a fighting chance to live.
Yes, he did. He sure did.
But I think the one thing we have to mourn the most in this episode is the loss of Messer and Cat Ears.
We will never
see them again.
When we get the figure of Messer with Cat Ears, we'll come with a little cat tombstone for him as well.
Wow, are we morbid today?
And a cardboard box as well.
I I just wonder if his, like, DX Chogokin, the cockpit shield, will have, like, a bullet hole in it and full of red.
Could that be the pre-order exclusive?
Yeah, that's a Tomashi exclusive right there.
Sarah, do you want to talk about like the comic you found online? The one that's just prescient of the meme.
Yeah, I searched up Messer on Twitter, and somebody posted, "This is how I thought Messer would die." And it shows what's it called? Kaname doing love lives, Nico Nico Ni, and like being super cute and idly, and Messer has a giant nosebleed, and Hayate's like, "Messer!"
The nosebleed splatters across the entire helmet. His helmet.
Yeah.
Dot.
Yeah. So maybe that's what happened. Who knows?
Oh, it was a nosebleed from the song.
Her music was so great. I just had to have a nosebleed. So maybe that's what happened.
The crazy thing, I noticed that tweet was made. The guy who wrote that as a joke, he made that comic back in May 12th.
Yeah, no, I know, right?
That this was actually going to happen. Oh man, he must be horrible, the guy who drew that.
So,
Adrian, do you remember those super deformed original Macross? They were reissued as Playmates toys, and they had they were the Valkyries, but they had the heat shield, so you could flip it over and you would see like
the cockpit around. Yeah,
yes. That's right.
They could do that. They could do that with Messer's thing, but you spin it around, and it's just like a blood splatter.
Oh, stop!
I mean, I'm gonna say, Mike, I agree with you. I think some of the deaths in the Frontier movies were there were too many fake outs. And, of course, as with all sane people, I believe that Luca should have died. But, you know, I think this time around, since that shot was dead center, unless they want to make it, you know, he moved fast and light to one side and just lost an arm.
Just a flesh wound.
And he comes back without an arm or maybe without a spine, something like that. I don't think they'll bring him back, honestly. And even looking at the opening to Frontier, they show Kaname with Arad. Arad wins this. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Arad...
No.
I think Arad's in cahoots with Keith, actually. I reckon he paid him off.
Not Keith, blonde guy.
Blonde guy, that's the one.
I love how Sarah knows all the voice actors' names.
That's characters.
Unless they have cat ears on at some point. Blonde guy.
Well, I mean, I can't really help it. They're using so many famous voice actors who are way overused. And it's just like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's Kimura Ryohei. Oh wait, it's the other guy played by Kimura Ryohei. And then it's just like, I don't know. Oh, and the red guy, his name is Ken, right? So I can't really help it.
Well, I wouldn't
be surprised. There's too many characters, damn it!
I wouldn't be surprised if Arad had something going on here. But, no, the opening reminded me, though, I wonder if they're going to show the reaction of Chuck's sister. Because she very obviously was into Messer the whole time. And, you know, worked in the building he lived in. So I wonder if maybe she's going to take revenge for him, infiltrate Windermere. I don't know.
That would be a completely different series, wouldn't it?
No, she's kind of like a Connery.
Isn't it? I think that show is called Charlie's Angels.
So, yeah, in the end, Messer bit the dust.
Apparently. It appears so that he...
Never lose hope. Never lose hope.
Yep. Like, he exploded like a water balloon with inside his cockpit.
Adrian, at this rate, I am going to start a petition online, and we are going to send it to Sunrise.
Hey, by the way, Sarah, do you remember the...
Yes.
So when Messer got hit with that laser, I mean, he just went... It was...
No, I think that the gruesomeness of the death was really shocking.
Yeah.
As I said, I thought he was just going to go out in an explosion and be like, boom! But no, man, that hit me hard.
And
But seriously, when it came to that scene and that happened, and when it shot the glass, I'm like, oh, shit, he's going down. But then when the blood splatter was so big.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
That's when, like...
It filled it.
Over where we're at, over here, when we're watching it, we're all sitting on this couch, and we just kind of all look at each other like, oh, okay, this ain't good.
That's the end of the cut is.
And then that scene where, like Mike was saying, where you can see his ship going down, and then it cuts to a theatrical, like, trailer crawl.
Yeah.
That was just like, oh, you guys...
Yeah. So we don't know what next episode is.
I was going to say they didn't give a next episode preview or nothing. They just left you with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
I honestly think that was for the best. Yeah, I think that was for the best because exactly, the cliffhanger, and also to keep the emotional balance. I mean, if they had and then they added cat ears and stuff and made it all ganky and it wouldn't have worked.
Interestingly, Sarah, when they did show the, you know, Goran no sponsor no teke de okurishimasu, whatever, they did show, again, after it faced the black, they show that, but it's Konami's tears are falling on the bracelet.
Yeah.
They show that again. And then we see Messer, the final salute, and then it just ends.
It's just punch after punch to the stomach. It's terrible. Well, I haven't felt like this, as I said, since Cross Edge. For a week, I was just rolled up in a ball.
I wasn't that affected by all the muff diving in Cross Edge. I don't know. I think you overreacted.
Okay, Egan knows what episode I'm talking about, but I just was rolled up in a ball for a week and just like, I can't believe this is happening. So this is kind of how I'm feeling now.
I had that reaction to the CG usage in Cross Edge.
No.
You're terrible.
This was a good episode, but it's still... paled in comparison to the death of Mihail, because that one was really well done, and they brought in Diamond Crevasse for that, and they had the ending where it shows the glasses, and that actually did have the, you know, see you next to culture, because it showed the scene where Clan was had all the armor packs on, and she's coming up the launching tube, and for me, I was like, damn, she's going to mess some people up. Mess her some people up. But that episode, because remember, Frontier is broadcast like at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I had to work. So I had to download it, the Raw, and then watch it at work. And I'm like behind my desk at work, like tearing up. Like, no, I'm good. Like, it's just allergies.
Cat allergies, right?
Cat allergies.
I completely agree that with Mihail they built it up better, and this was one of my major concerns. Well, major's maybe overstating it, but Delta is so fast paced. The first half of this episode had some great character building and some really fun stuff with the Jellyfish Festival. No one is ever going to remember that festival except for the Messer stuff ever again. Like, rewatching the episode the second time, I was just like, can we just skip most of the first half and go straight to the second half?
Arguably, you can say the same thing on Pine Salad.
Maybe,
That whole beginning when they're talking about, you know, the pineapple salad, I'm going to make a pineapple salad. And then, we're talking about, of course, the infamous episode from the first Macross series, where, once again, another mentor-like ace pilot gets it in that series. And there was a kind of a jovial kind of spirit towards the beginning of the episode. I'm going to make pineapple salad and see what happens. And then now anyone thinks about pineapple salad in Macross fandom, it's a death flag kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I know what I'm bringing to the next party.
Oh no, she's going to get us all. Oh no, we're doomed.
I'll eat my hat if Mike is right, and then when we come to the next episode, it opens up with Messer in a hospital bed, and everyone surrounding him, and you hear, dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, yay!
Ain't gonna happen, Mike. Ain't gonna happen.
Like I said, until you see a body, he ain't dead.
Well, to go back to the pacing, I think the one issue I have with Delta is that it's so fast-paced. You know, I was, as I said, I was thinking he'd be shipped off for at least a couple of episodes before they would even try something like this. And the fact that they did it all in one episode kind of lessens the impact.
For me, it heightened. Like, that made us even more shocked because we were expecting it would be dragged out a bit, and then boom, here it happens right there. So I think they did that deliberately because they were playing with people's expectations, the red herring that all the death flags are thought he was just being transferred off and that's not going to happen yet. And then bam, they hit us at the very end.
If you look at the Matome sites online, they say, what was it, the title of the Yara on one that they're recapping the episode and they said, "No, we had just gotten past the death flag, Messer!" They were screaming.
Yeah, there's a lot of hurt online now.
I don't know, the timing on this episode or the pacing within this episode really reminds me of Yamato 2199 pacing.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah, but it's about 15 minutes, 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
We were talking we started this podcast that when in the Pineapple Satellite episode, the death episode happened in the first Macross series, episode 18, halfway through the series then of 36 episodes, and they didn't even know it was going to be 36. It was more like two-thirds of the way of what they were planning the episode length to be. So we're in episode 10, who knows how many are to come. So yeah. It's like, wow.
The fact that this cut to a theatrical ending, as you mentioned, Adrian, and we've had our first death, you could also almost think that this is the halfway mark. This could almost feel like, oh, is this only a 20-episode series? Now, that really doesn't bear itself out.
I felt that
out.
Way too, Gwen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I felt that way too. Like, I thought, because of the fact that it went to the theatrical crawl and then there was no OP, and they showed no preview for the next episode, I'm like, I wonder if they're going to give us a new opening and ending next episode, if this marks like the halfway point.
Good point. Look, what I was thinking is like all those things that we were just mentioned, the theatrical crawl, the fact that they showed the episode title of this episode and not the next episode, and we had this last scene in El Shahar. When was the last time we saw all of this? The very first episode of this.
The very beginning.
That's the only time we saw all of this happened. And it's like they're going looping back, and then setting us for a new path to go off for the rest of the series.
Quite possibly.
Now, I have to give a certain complaint, exactly what we were talking about, but I feel like the series has too many characters, and it's too fast-paced for that number of characters.
Yeah, look, you complain, and then they kill someone off, so stop it.
No, what? I just think that it seems kind of odd how fast-paced it is. Now, I've seen Macross F, and it just seems off that, you know, we're up to episode 10 now, but we're already killing somebody off. We barely gotten to know our villains, and it just seems odd. That's all.
What I was thinking about in terms of pacing and how fast things are in this particular series compared to other Macross series is that it reminds me of another Kawamori series that had as much happening in each episode and had things going on such a fast pace, Escaflowne. There's a lot of things that remind me of Escaflowne in this series.
There are, not this episode in particular, but given the fact that we know there's 9 Blu-rays, I actually doubt it will be a 20-episode series because it just doesn't work unless they start putting only 2 episodes.
Like, Escaflowne was a 26-episode series, 2 Kuru series. Something might be
right,
similar.
Right, yeah. But I definitely, Mike, I'm with you. It definitely felt like this was a turning point, like a halfway mark, but I don't think it will be.
Yeah.
But the thing about having a lot of characters, I mean, I think they're going to whittle away at them because if this happened and it's going along the whole idol culture thing, Kaname is probably going to exit the story at this point. Like, she will probably leave Valkyrie as a singing member.
Well, either that or they'll have to get
She's
new
not
power.
Leaving.
I would
she's
say
she's not
she
leaving.
Leave after this,
she is graduating.
Okay, that is true. She will graduate.
All right, so now that Sarah has said those words, let's see what happens when she gets killed off.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I actually wouldn't be against that, honestly.
Wow.
I like her. I like her, and I think as quoting somebody from my work, she's what's it called? There has to be a certain death count for an emotional impact, and I think that with all that Kaname has been through because of Messer, I think that her death would have impact. So I wouldn't be against it in terms of drama.
You and your co-worker's a sick, twisted individual.
I know he is, but he's also an anime producer, so I think he has a little bit of insight. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like her death might have a good dramatic impact. I like her as a character, and no, I don't want her to die. But in terms of a drama of a full, 26 episode series, it might come in handy. I mean, that sounds stupid, but
yeah, her death
the words aren't coming to me.
Yes.
It might be a good literary tool. That's all I'm saying.
Might come in handy. Sarah's walking down the street. When something needs to happen, she pulls a little flag out of her back pocket. That's the death flag. This could come in handy. Hey!
Wow.
You're saying, Egan?
My worry about her is that her character arc, it's going to be tough having her continue on. Like, where can her character go forward from this? It could. Like, we saw with Claudia in the first series, after what happened in the first series, could something similar happen to this? Although, arguably, Claudia's arc didn't do much afterwards.
Well, the easy way to continue her story arc would be to put cat ears on Arab. But, Mike, you're saying?
So old!
Okay, you're saying?
Well, I think it goes back to what you guys had mentioned last week, that, like these characters, they were just these two-dimensional characters, and then like this developing relationship and the whole backstory. Because like Kaname was just like support. She was just like this background character that barked out orders and sang during Walk Your Song, and you didn't know much about her. And so like that, this last episode, last week's episode and this week's episode, both they really moved her character forward and made her more well-rounded as a character. So now I care about her. And so yes, her death would mean something if they do decide to kill her off later, but like, because now it's like I actually I don't lust after her like I do after Makino, but I have a feeling about her. She's not just like some tertiary background character that like, okay, yeah, they're cannon fodder. They die, who cares? But so, I mean, that was in two episodes. I thought that was pretty well done to take this character that was just undeveloped, this flat character, and then make you care about her in less than 40 minutes. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good call on their part.
It would definitely be interesting, not necessarily convenient, as Sarah was saying, but to have an idol die would be a first for Macross, would it not?
Major in terms of a major singer.
Yeah, getting killed in the course of the plot, as opposed to falling through a black hole afterwards.
That's why you have a big group. You can kill off one of them.
Now we know the secret to AKB48. Wow.
So
there's more where they came from. Yeah.
So yeah, look, I think this sets us up for a lot of interesting potential next week. You know, for example, where are the Windermerians going to be at this point? They've gotten this huge overpowered effect from this amplifier on Hines, but it's obviously going to have ramifications on his health, and they can't do it all the time. We also saw, interestingly enough, very briefly in Al Shahal, the first ever female victim of the VAR that I think we've seen in the series. We saw a female being affected. Very briefly, whereas it's been nearly all men to date. And of course, you know, the fallout of Mess's supposed death, and you know, where does Delta go when they are down their most important, their best pilot? Does Kaname graduate and the team is smaller? Do they get another pilot in to support her? How's it going to work? Because now the teams are not balanced as far as one-to-one.
That's right. There's six major pilots on the Aerial Knights, but now we're down to four for Delta.
Ooh. Also, something to think about is, what's it called? Mikumo and Freya both knocked out during battle. So what's going on with that? And also, what is Mikumo? I think that's probably going to play a big part in the future.
Mikumo is love.
I love Mikumu. I love her. I love her, and I hope, I know she's innocent, but something is going on in the background that is going, like Cheryl, like what happened with Cheryl, she realized what she really was, and I think this is probably going to be something similar.
It was interesting that we were talking, you know, how they were knocked out, Mikumu and Freya. Heinz, he collapsed a bit, but he got back up much faster than the other two did.
So, he probably wasn't communicating with the ruins, per se.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
But anyway, guys, any final thoughts? If not, I think we've commiserated enough over the mess of pop for this episode.
Kind of a messer forever.
They are eternal. Yeah.
Yeah, they are eternal.
Okay. I'm glad we were doing this podcast, because I know one thing they do for the post-episode shows for Breaking Bad or for another series like Walking Dead, it's almost like a therapy session to have these kind of talks afterwards, kind of talk us down from where we were at and just get us back to earth and back to reality after what we just went through.
Yeah. I'm Chris Hardwick. We just saw Messer go splat on his windshield.
I'm glad I tuned in today. Today was a very good time to tune in.
All right.
I wanted to give some final thoughts just real quick about last week, and then maybe, you know, we could... Because it's something that you guys had brought up, was that the it felt like it wasn't really a triangle yet, because it was all just rumor and speculation, and like Hayate is completely clueless. But I was going to bring it up this week, but I guess my speculation or my wish won't come true because it Messer's dead. But I was going to say, wouldn't it be interesting if the triangle was not the main characters, if they weren't the main couple, if the Mirage and Freya and Hayate was not the triangle, but it was actually like these other like side characters, that I think that would be more interesting, because you already have a lot of backstory with the main characters. You've got Mirage and her family history and trying to live up to her family history. You've got Hayate and his father and like, you know, who is he? And you've got Freya and her Windermerian and her short lifespan and, you know, what she's going through. Like, to me, like, that romance felt shoehorned in last week. Like, I felt like it was just like, oh, this is a Macross trope, so we have to get it, so we're going to throw it in here. Whereas, to me, the more interesting romantic relationship was Kaname and Messer, and you know, they haven't really done anything with Aerith yet, but maybe they will. But
the Japanese,
I thought,
completely,
you know,
agreed. Yeah.
The Japanese,
yeah,
blocks,
like, I just felt,
oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm. I
was gonna say, I just felt like the whole Hayate thing, the whole triangle was just shoehorned in. I felt like it happened too fast, and they're trying to just like pry it in there. So
I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I feel the three of them don't have enough chemistry at the moment, and I feel like, you know, the thing with suddenly them being like, oh, the Jellyfish Festival, and be blushing. And I felt like, wait, where is that coming from? I haven't seen a trigger yet. I mean, we've seen little things, but not enough for there to be like actual feelings yet. So I agree.
I think those three, the main three, they don't necessarily have the chemistry when it comes to romance. They have good chemistry in terms of friendship, good chemistry as comrades. But yeah.
I agree.
Romance. Yeah. And like the Japanese blogs, going on what you guys are talking about, they seem to be less emphasizing any potential love triangle between those three, and for the longest time talking about Kaname, Messer, and Arad. Like, is there something going on? And they're almost more interested in that, what's going on there, than they are of the main three.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a random aside, did we ever see those lasers that were in the front of the Draken Fire before? Those little tiny nose ones that nailed Messer? Because it's just like the little arm cannons that popped up a couple of episodes back on Bogue versus Hayate. It's like, how many of these little goddamn guns do you have implanted in your Valkyries, guys?
I only noticed those just because we were all looking at, you know, the Akiba's showcase when they had the variable fighter toy. And you can see every little piece in nook and cranny of the... That's the only place I ever saw those particular cannons.
Mm. Interesting. Mm. Oh, well, look, guys, it's been a long cast, and I thank you all for your thoughts. I think it's about time to wrap it up and fold out. Okay. So, Sarah, if people want to find you, where can they?
They can find me on Twitter. I am tweeting in English in S underscore N-E-L-K-I-N. And you can see my random musings there.
Mike.
You can find me on Twitter. I tweet semi-regularly. Usually you'll find me tweeting at Weird Al. At Mike in Redlands.
Okay, and Egan, I'm not even going to ask. Adrian.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Egan. Let us, where can we find you?
Well, yeah, I don't know where you can find me. I just want to say happy birthday, Aurica.
Aww.
Okay.
My dog. I was supposed to say happy birthday, Megumi, but...
you could find me at Giant Robo on Twitter. Also, next month, you can find me and Mike running the PA Works booth at Anime Expo.
Oh, you're going to be there too.
I'm going
Everyone's
to be there.
Everyone's going to be there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if I haven't said where I work yet, but if anybody's going to Anime Expo, you'll probably see me eventually. I'm working on the industry side, so see you there.
That's right. Sarah is a convention staffer. That's her job.
Four or five of the regular folks
staffer, here. Staffer, industry person, but yes, yeah.
Four or five of the regular folks here are going to be at AX.
So hopefully someone records something for the podcast.
Renato will be there.
Yep.
Megan will be there. Well, he won't be anywhere you can see him.
Yeah.
Sarah will be there. I'll be there. Mike will be there. And there'll probably be some Macross fan gatherings. We'll make sure to say hi.
It'll be interesting seeing the cosplay there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the cosplay circle. That's what I'm looking
for. It's a lot easier to dress as Mesa now.
Wow.
Whoa. Oh, wow. Okay,
that's how we get through this. The therapy, humor gets us through this.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Anime Expo and just dump a pail of red paint on me. And you've be like, I'm Messer.
I'm going to get a Tamagotchi with cat ears and call it Messer, and that's just going to get me through.
Falling off.
It's okay.
Planet.
He's alive. I'll feed him. He's alive.
Of course, this is Gwyn Campbell. You can find me on Twitter at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C. And you can always communicate with us directly via Gmail at speakerpod, speakerpod@gmail.com. So by all means, if anyone has any questions, if you'd like to complain to Sarah about, death flagging Mesa, feel free to drop us a line. So until next week, this is the Gurr Talk. And we are looking forward to next week when we will, of course, be seeing Kaname strapping a pair of fastbacks to her back. So until that happens, we're folding out.